Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're talking about the issues that impact our lives, that make a difference. Today, we are going to do something different than the normal program. Normally, you would hear 20 minutes of the latest on health and nutrition, then environmental issues for about 5 to 10 minutes, our special guest, social issues, and then talk back. However, today, the entire hour is going to be spent exploring some challenging issues involving 9/11. I will be inviting two individuals to share their perspectives. We have Dr. Timothy Eastman. Dr. Eastman holds a doctorate in geophysics from the University of Alaska. He is the Deputy Group Manager for Space Science Support at NASA at Goddard Space Flight Center and a consultant with Plasmas International that specializes in space physics, data systems, plasma sciences, and philosophy. His scientific work over three decades has been in the study of plasma, the charged particles and fields that are pervasive in the universe. He is also a signatory for Scientists for 9/11 Truth, a group of scientific professionals calling for a new independent and science-based investigation into the events of 9/11 and associated with the peer-reviewed publication journal 9/11 Studies. He is the co-author with Todd Fletcher of a recent peer-reviewed study, The Pentagon Attack in Context. Our second panelist will be Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Robert Bauman. He is a retired Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Air Force who flew over 100 combat missions in Vietnam. He is a recipient of the Eisenhower Medal, the George F. Kennan Prize for a Peace Prize, the President's Medal for Veterans for Peace, the Society for Military Engineers Gold Medal twice. He has been awarded 6 Air Medals and dozens of other honors. Dr. Bauman holds a Ph.D. in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech and is regarded as one of the country's foremost experts on national security. As a former head of the Star Wars missile defense program under Presidents Ford and Carter, he was the first to coin this phrase, Star Wars, in a 1977 secret memo. After he realized the program was intended solely for aggression rather than as a defensive tool to initiate a nuclear war with the Soviets, he left the program and campaigned against it. He's on the record stating that the official government version of 9/11 is wrong, and we want to see what his opinions are today. His website is thepatriots.us. Nice to have you both with us today. Dr. Eastman, Dr. Bauman?
Hello, this is Dr. Bauman.
Okay. We're going to start with you, Dr. Eastman, and in the context of exploring this, since you have done a great deal of research, I'm merely going to give you a venue and you take it as far as you need to. I don't believe in going back and forth. I believe that give you an opportunity to really put everything in proper context, all right?
Okay, yes.
Good. That said, I would like if you could begin to take a look at what you and others in the field who you respect have found are the inconsistencies in the official report. And if you could deconstruct the official report, at least where you have hard evidence that could withstand cross-examination in the court of law, good forensic evidence. They said this, but your evidence or those of others who have researched say the opposite. So please explain to us in depth where you feel that you do challenge the official report, where others challenge it, and you can concur with them. The forum is yours. Take your time.
Well, the way I'd like to proceed with this is by a focus on the available research. And although most scientific and engineering results are shared in a wide variety of venues, an important standard for scholarly work is that of independent peer review. Now, I know that the the official government reports of various types, including the NIST report, haven't been peer-reviewed in the usual sense that we consider for science and technical purpose. So such peer review procedure, of course, is no guarantee of finality or accuracy. You know, it has limitations, but it certainly enhances substantially, on average, the quality of the output report. Relevant to this, there was also an OMB directive that came out in 2004, specifying that agencies must undertake a peer review of influential scientific information before they disseminate their information to the public. So, but nevertheless, the NIST reports came out after that and were not peer-reviewed in that way. So what I did earlier this year was to just look at what is out there in terms of the peer-reviewed literature, and this is something that anyone can do. I did an examination of that literature by virtue of looking at the databases available at the Library of Congress and other major research libraries, but I use the Library of Congress.
Dr. Eastman, we're having a little trouble hearing you. Could you please speak a little louder?
Okay, I will. Okay, and so what I did is I worked with the Academic Search Complete database at the Library of Congress. Another database is the World of Science database. With Academic Search Complete database, they had available over 5,100 peer-reviewed journals, which I then searched using keywords. I searched those databases with keywords such as WTC, etc., and was able to then capture all of the peer-reviewed papers I knew about at the time, but then obtained a number of others and obtained some 1,500 records that I looked at in detail. Now, I would think, at least I'm hoping by this evaluation, I thought that an examination of peer-reviewed literature should at least be a reasonable proxy of substantive evidence-based research on these topics. So then, as a result of that look, indeed, I focused it on the specific question of the mechanism of collapse of trade towers 1, 2, and 7. And so of the 1,500 records I identified, I then went through all of the abstracts and then isolated all the papers that might provide substantive discussion of that issue of mechanism of collapse. And then I, insofar as possible, obtained the papers themselves, but at least checked the abstracts and found ones that were either identify them as either being for the official theory or the official conspiracy theory or questioning it. And so in my search, I also included the Journal of 9/11 Studies, which is peer-reviewed, and a couple of journals, such as the Open Chemical Physics Journal of the Bentham Science Publishers. So then I identified of this some 75 peer-reviewed technical papers that seriously question the official conspiracy theory, and in contrast with less than 20 peer-reviewed papers that defend it. And then within that group, and this seems to be, to me, it was a surprise because I would have expected many more peer-reviewed papers on such an important topic. Mind you, I was focusing on the first 10 years, the first decade since 9/11 for this analysis. And the result I came up with, then I went and read every one of those pro-official theory papers to evaluate how substantive were they, and again, to my surprise, found that a certain subset were, so to speak, neutral with respect to the issue of mechanism collapse. In other words, neutral with respect to fire-induced progressive collapse versus controlled demolition. One of them, three of three of the papers were by a person named Sharapanov, who had a speculative fracture propagation mechanism. But then he reports that that scheme would require far longer time interval for building failure than the actual case, the actual observation. So by the person's own admission, would not be viable. And then I basically isolated then nominally 10 viable papers that supported the official theory, of which the most of them were by Professor Bazant or related. And then I also looked at critiques of Bazant's work that were part of the broader set of papers, and these critiques bring out specific ways in which his representation of the collapse is highly problematic. In particular, he proposes to consider them as a one-dimensional system versus two- or three-dimensional. And so this could be potentially defended for Tower 1, but hardly for Tower 2. And in actual fact, I would say the three-dimensional effects are really have to be incorporated for all three.
Okay, Dr. Eastman, we're talking with a lay audience, and if you could, you have certainly established that you've done your homework, and you're using a good qualified scientific model for comparing the official version and the peer-reviewed literature supporting the official version versus the peer-reviewed literature that challenges it.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, we're no closer to understanding any specifics. Would you please now focus in lay language on what are the inconsistencies? Set aside the fact you've done this methodical research, which we respect. Tell us in lay language that we can understand where there are legitimate challenges against the official position.
Okay, well, one key challenge is with respect to Trade Tower 7. Remind you, there were three towers, Towers 1, 2, and 7, that came down on 9/11, and there were two airplanes. Two airplanes hit the two towers, 1 and 2, which early on we were told had some direct connection or relationship to the failure of the towers, even though later it was officially indicated, NISO indicated, that the airplanes were secondary to it, that instead there were fires that were initiated and that the collapses of the buildings were fire-induced via a fire-induced progressive collapse mechanism. But then when one looks at the nature of the collapse, and this is especially true of Trade Tower 7, that tower, upon its initiation of collapse, came down at absolute free fall for over 100 feet, more than 8 stories. Of its collapse was at the same acceleration as if you were to simply drop a ball without any resistance whatsoever. And so free fall indicates that all the support structures had to be instantaneously, or with exceeding small time interval, had to be severed. And this is essentially impossible by any fire-induced process. So that is, so to speak, a key challenge, and there has never been an explanation for that. And the NIST report embeds a reference to of the freefall interval, but claims there's an interval in front of it that which they do a simple average. But the interval in front of it is based upon a camera angle, which is from the base, and when you look at camera angles that are at the same, approximately same level, indicate that the initiation of collapse is absolutely at the time of the beginning of the absolute free fall interval. So they add an interval which is simply incorrect. And further, there are critiques of the NIST report and by professional engineers which call out a variety of specific problems with that report.
For the lay public, in normal structures, steel structures, these are large steel reinforced structures, you would have some of these structures intact, which would have changed the way that the building imploded. It would not have just simply been a pancake effect straight down. It would have had, under normal circumstances, it would have had interference with some of the support structures themselves. That was not the case. So then the implication is the only way that Building 7 could have come down in the way that we saw, since it was not hit by any airplane, since there were no major fires, there were some fires, but many of those fires were out when it collapsed, was that there were controlled detonations. That then raises the following questions that we have no answers for. Why would someone have wanted Building 7 to have been detonated? What would have been the purpose of that? Was there anything particularly unique about the building? Who would have had access to do that? And who would have had the ability to stop the FBI, National Security Agency, 16 other government agencies, from doing an investigation and finding the truth? It's just, in one sense, it challenges the average American and virtually all the mainstream media. Every single mainstream media, from CNN, MSNBC, CBS, they've all accepted the official version without challenge. Now groups coming along and they're saying how this happened is not possible. It goes against the laws of physics. Fair enough. Then that begs the question, how could it have been done? Was it thermitic, nanothermitic materials? If so, where would they have gotten them? If it were a part of a plan, what was the underlying motivation of the plan? Who would have had the access, the capability to have pulled this off? Is there any history in the United States of any false flag operation, any time? And if so, what were they? Who was involved? And how did they get away with it? And if not, then this would be unique, a unique circumstance. So these are the natural questions that evolve from this. And before we go over to Professor Bauman, I'd like for you to try to address these, even if some of the answers are your own personal and speculative answers. I still believe that since this door has been opened, we have to walk through it and see what we can find.
Well, you've done a nice summary of some of those elements. For example, you mentioned about how it is that the top of the buildings could come down and crush the more massive lower buildings. That's one of the key problems that's never been addressed. Toward the end of your discussion, you raised the question about the false flag operations and past cases of that.
Please speak up, Dr. Eastman. My engineer just informed me that his fader switch is as high as it can go, so if you could just be a little louder, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Well, with regard to the issue of previous false flag cases, I happen to have in hand a copy of the February 2010 issue of American Behavioral Scientists, which is society's professional journal, and it focuses on framing SCAD research, that's State Crimes Against Democracy, with extensive discussion of previous false flag operations that associated with that are of a type like this, although all less in scope. So that's been discussed, I think, in some detail in the literature, and then another point I would like to just raise, in terms of fire-induced progressive collapse, one might look at comparables. And for example, there was the Windsor Building in Madrid, Spain, in 2005 that was under a tremendous fire for 22 hours, and it had its steel structure was only steel reinforced. was very minor. It's essentially no failure. And here, Tower 7 or even 1 and 2, there's imagining for a much shorter time that somehow you have this total failure. Just basically from a fire-induced progressive collapse process. So the comparables that are out there, and over 100-plus years of high-rise steel frame buildings never having them collapse, and to claim that you have three collapsing in one day, I think is far beyond credibility.
I appreciate your opinion here. And we're going to go over to our other guests now. Just one thought. In the official version, they do not allow anything in the way of explosions. And yet there are, on the record, 105 individuals, including police captains, firefighters, battalion commanders, people who worked in the building, who I've interviewed, who stated that prior to the planes hitting the building, there were explosions in the basement. And one threw one of the people clear across the room, caused severe damages to one of his co-workers. He had to carry that person out of the building and just made it out in time to throw himself and that person under a vehicle when the building began to collapse. So what we have to look at is it realistic to assume that people who were at the ground, first responders, who heard multiple explosions, and several said that they heard explosions as if they were in a ring going around a circumference, that we're to dismiss all of these as either unsupportable anecdotal references, or are we to take them with some credibility? And if so, then why do you believe that we have not heard a single word in the mainstream media about people who contradict the official position? So that's something we'll come back to for you.
Oh, yes, yeah. There's substantial data on that, and Professor Graham McLean, for example, is one person who's done a wonderful study on that. And another thing is it's not just word of mouth or eyewitness. We also have quantitative audio data of the explosions, which frequency analysis has been done, and you can identify the explosions and their intervals in the audio channel.
Good. Okay, Professor Eastman, please stay on the line. By the way, this is Dr. Timothy Eastman. He is a doctorate in geophysics, University of Alaska, and is the deputy group manager for space science support at NASA and the Goddard Space Flight Center, and also a consultant in Plasmas International, the specialized study of space physics, data systems, and plasma sciences. So, and he is an author of peer-reviewed literature, so it's a very credible person we are listening to. Our next guest, Robert Bowman, is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and he has an enormous amount of background in this. He has a PhD in aeronautics, nuclear engineering from Caltech, and is regarded as one of the nation's foremost experts on national security. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
Would you take us through your review of all the evidence out there, including David Ray Griffin's material? And you are a crucial member of the 9/11 Truth Movement and the more credible groups out there. There are some questions I have, if you would address. Why only on that day, that morning, were there military air exercises happening, and could those exercises have confused any other military surveillance systems and therefore prevented them from discerning the truth from fiction about the attacks? Also, would you address the views of yourself and other pilots about the ability of the hijackers to carry out these extraordinary, really rigorous flight attacks? And take us through then what you feel are these parts of this argument that the American public has been denied the virtue of your insights. The form is yours.
Okay, thank you. Well, with regard to your last point about pilots, there's been a lot of talk that those poorly trained Arab hijackers could not have performed the intricate maneuvers necessary to do what the government says they did. Hani Hanjour, for example, the worst of the Arab so-called pilots, performed this diving spiral maneuver to hit the Pentagon just above ground level. And it's been said, well, it would take an extremely experienced pilot to pull that off. There's other indications that no matter how experienced the pilot was, an airliner with its software could not have performed that maneuver, no matter who was at the controls, because the such maneuvers would be devastating to the passengers. I think the truth is, and this is my supposition after studying a lot of the relevant material and talking to other pilots, I think that there was no human pilot in control, that all of the aircraft that day were under remote control. The pilots, the pilots from American Airlines, United Airlines, were disabled. Their communications was cut. There may or may not have been anybody else in the cockpit, but the cockpit didn't do the professional pilots any good because they had no control of the aircraft or their communications. All that was taken over by remote control. That's my supposition, and I have seen no evidence against it. What was your first question?
All right, we will pick it up from where you just left off. If we have a situation where we do not, we have remote-controlled planes and no actual pilots flying them, then we have to ask the following. How would this have been possible? Is there technology, was there technology available to have allowed that to have occurred? That's number one. Number two, who would have had that technology? You would have had to have a rather substantially well-organized team of people. And if they were going to go to that length and then cause the Twin Towers number 7 to implode, they would have had access to the thermitic material. Who would have had that kind of clearance? They would have had to have known that they could have blocked investigations at the CIA, National Security Agency, and FBI, and other organizations had jurisdiction to these matters. Who could have kept that from ever being revealed? Because if any of this information ever got out, the American public would just go ballistic. And first thing they'd do is to probably smack down every one of these journalists who have refused to even acknowledge the legitimacy that there are criticisms that warrant further investigation. Then you have to ask, what would have been their motives? Who would you suspect would have had the power, the position to allow this to happen? Because this would have been a false flag operation. So if you could answer these, and finally, as a pilot, and not just any pilot, one of the most decorated pilots and knowledgeable pilots in the United States, 100 combat missions in Vietnam, the recipient of the Eisenhower Medal, the George Kennan Peace Prize, the President's Medal of Veterans for Peace, Society of Military Engineers, gold medal twice, 6 air medals, dozens of honors, and a background as you've had, including a former head of the Star Wars Missile Defense Program under Presidents Ford and Carter, and an expert on national security, that you would then know better than any of us that someone would have had to have extraordinarily competent access, because all the phone calls, all the emails, all of the communications, wired communications, wireless communications, is monitored by the National Security Agency. So they would have picked up on some conspiracy somehow, somewhere, I would imagine. And then when you look at the Pentagon, you have a 10-foot hole. How is it that that plane that was 44 feet from the ground to the top of the tail, there's no indentation in the building? If you're heading
You're getting too many questions on here. Let me handle a few of them right now. You asked about how could they pull this off and who would have access and who would know. Well, there are elements of the CIA and National Security Agency and so forth. Let me propose that a rogue agency within the White House, run by Dick Cheney, could have done a lot of things, just like a rogue agency within the White House headed by Ollie North could do a lot of stuff a decade or so earlier. It doesn't seem to me at all difficult to imagine the cover-up being successful in confiscating all the FBI's videotapes showing whatever hit the Pentagon, and everything else, the videotapes at the airport, all sorts of things that have been confiscated by elements of our government, never released to the public. And why? Why would they do this? In order to start the war against Iraq. Now, they had to go take on Afghanistan first because they could tie Afghanistan to Osama bin Laden and 9/11, although the FBI has never made any connection between Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda and 9/11 to his death, whenever that was. The FBI insisted that they had no hard evidence against Osama bin Laden to connect him to 9/11. But we believe that there are parts of our government that made billions of dollars on the war against Iraq, and that it was the primary purpose for 9/11. And why Building 7, only two airplanes, and yet they brought down Building 7 in a very suspicious way, although it hadn't been hit by an aircraft. There was minimum damage to the exterior of the building. When you see the building collapse, you see the floors all coming down parallel. There was no pancaking whatsoever. The floors were coming down in parallel. The windows weren't even breaking. And the reason that they brought down Building 7, I believe, was that they had to because they didn't want people to discover the munitions that were set to bring it down, as in Towers 1 and 2. I believe that Flight 93 that supposedly crashed in Pennsylvania was originally intended to hit Building 7. But when it didn't show up, they said, geez, they're going to find all those explosives. We better figure a way to bring it down. So, you know, that's just a guess, but I think it's a heck of a lot better guess than the garbage that the government's passing out to us.
As a pilot, would you or anyone that you know in your history as a pilot, would have they been able to have flown a plane into the Pentagon in the way that we were told?
Well, it's questionable, I'll say that. But it'd be much easier by remote control.
All right. You have...
And yes, the technology for the remote control existed at the time and had been put in a number of Boeing aircraft. The original purpose that they gave us for doing the remote control system was so that somebody on the ground outside the plane could take over the flight controls in case the plane was hijacked, and so they could take control away from the hijackers. It's sort of ironic, but that was the excuse for the system.
Are you familiar with the stand-down that occurred on the morning of 9/11 and who would have been responsible for ordering that?
Yeah. We have quite a bit of evidence that the stand down was, if not totally, at least in great measure under the control of Dick Cheney.
All right. Let's go back a moment to the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. We have been told that there were dozens and dozens of security cameras around the Pentagon, and yet the American public and media have not been given those videos to look at, nor was the 9/11 Commission given those videos, even though it had requested it. Now, from your understanding, when a plane is going at the speed that was supposed to have hit the Pentagon, based upon the wingspan of the plane and the tail height of the plane, at the very least, there should have been an imprint of the plane hitting the building. And yet, outside of this 10-foot hole, we don't see scorched earth. We don't see a lot of broken windows, nor do we see the implant of the tail or the fuselages or the wings, nor do we find any of that. How is it possible that something happening like this virtually vaporizes all of that plus all the bodies?
Yeah, where did the engines go?
Yeah, where did the engines? They were on the outside of the building.
Yeah. No, it's a real tall tale, and I think a not very well done false flag attack.
There are also dozens of individuals at every level in the Pentagon who claim they heard multiple explosions and even had watches stopped. And when you look at the time that their watches stopped, and you look at the time that we are told when the official time that it happened, you're dealing with almost an 8-minute difference in time. And I'm just surprised the American media, members of Congress, and people within the CIA or national security haven't been more outspoken in criticizing these inconsistencies. Even if they don't have a better scenario of what happened, at least they could deconstruct what we're told did happen.
Well, evidently there are just too many people in the right places that have enormous incentive not to deconstruct the official narrative. I don't know whether it's threat of death or death to their family or what, but there are people out there who know the truth.
Why do you feel that yourself or other members of 9/11 truth groups have not been targeted?
Well, some of us have.
Have any of you been threatened?
Yes.
And by whom and what were the threats?
Well, I have been threatened with blackmail and attempted bribery, death threats, but most of that was due to my earlier blowing the whistle on Reagan's Star Wars system, where I had directed all of those programs under Ford and Carter when Reagan was elected. The people around him, like Cheney and Richard Perle and the neocons, turned that program into a crash program to develop offensive weapons disguised as defense. And I went around the country and I gave 5,000 speeches against Reagan's Star Wars, and I got lots of threats. I think because of that and because of my notoriety as a whistleblower, that perhaps they've been afraid to take me out, especially when there are other people like David Ray Griffin who have published widely on this, and shutting me up isn't going to do any good with all of that out there.
We're going to come back after a short station identification break. I'm Gary Nall. This is a special edition of my program, Monday through Fridays, 3 p.m. on WPFW. Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bellman and Professor Timothy Eastman, both people of outstanding reputation, impeccable credentials, and they both are now telling us that this was a false flag operation. If I understand them, and I do not want to misconstrue their statements, that it was not plausible. It's not within the realm of physics or anything in the current science as we know it to have had all of these different things happen on that day. An airplane that goes into a building where very few pilots would have been able to have done that, and if any, and yet we're supposed to believe that really grossly untrained people in small aircraft did this. We're also supposed to look at the physical evidence of a small hole in the Pentagon wall and ask, where are the fuselages? Where's the wings? Where are the bodies? Where's the luggage? Where's anything? Everything was vaporized. Is there any other circumstance? I looked in the peer-reviewed literature. I looked at every single major crash of an airliner in the last 40 years and cannot find one where everything disappeared. Here, almost everything disappeared. But also, you would have had an impact where we would have seen the imprint of the plane as it hit the building. You would have seen substantial damage in the other areas, in the height and the width. We didn't see that. Where are the security cameras? And now we have thermetic materials, and we know that that's only made in one place in the United States, at an Army special, what they called, I think they call it, what is the gold the group, where it's meaning very high, not golden, gold is metal, but high and very prestigious group of people who work in this particular Army research center. Just the idea that that many people could have been involved in the planning. That meant that they would have known that there was going to be a terrorist attack and decided to use it to their advantage. Who are they? We don't know. All we can is have some speculative positions put out there. But when you have over 2,000 highly credible scientists, engineers, architects, physicists, and other experts, including military personnel, and say this could not possibly have happened the way we were told, then you would think that there would be a real independent investigation. In fact, just this week, the emeritus judge of the Supreme Court of Italy and one of the country's most famous and prosecutors stated that this was a false flag operation, much like what happened in his country in the 1950s and 60s, where the United States CIA and NATO and other European countries caused the assassination by bombings and terrorist acts on innocent civilians in order to get the Italian people to demand tighter security, greater security measures against the communists. And that was a false flag operation. I've actually done the research on false flag operations, those that are credible, that can be proven, and there are many. So that's where we're at in our discussion. Back in a moment to continue with our guest. Please stay with us.
The Latino Media Collective, WPFW's weekly program discussion on the issues and concerns affecting the Latino community, is moving. Beginning on Thursday, October 4th at 7 p.m., join co-hosts Oscar Fernandez and Humberto Martinez in their new Thursday evening 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. time slot. Again, that's the Latino Media Collective. Same great hosts, same informative guests and discussion. Thursdays from 7 p.m. until 8 p.m., beginning on Thursday, October 4th. Only on WPFW, your station for jazz and justice radio, sustaining and serving the collective needs and imagination of the community.
Se viene el estallido de mi guitarra.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. Let us return now to our discussion on a special day of 9/11 investigation. I'm Gary Nall. In my career, I have originated more than 300 in-depth investigative reports, and I've had 61 cover stories. My work has appeared on 60 Minutes in 2020, won an Emmy for Geraldo Rivera on the challenge against Dr. Stanislaw Brzezinski, and on 60 Minutes on Dr. Lawrence Burton. I've never had to retract a sentence in any of my work over these many 36 years. And hence, we do original investigations. But it's not about me doing investigations on 9/11 because there's so many other people doing it that they are doing it much better, and I can focus my attention on other issues. Let us return now to Dr. Timothy Eastman. Dr. Eastman, would you share now some additional insights in the remainder of our program? We'll have some comments from you and then finish our program with Dr. Bauman on this. Do you agree or disagree with any of the statements you've heard with Dr. Bauman that he believes that Dick Cheney, neocons, that had an agenda prior to 9/11 to getting us into Eurasia, to controlling Eurasia, to controlling the geopolitical environment, to controlling economic interests, to controlling oil and gas and routes for gas through Afghanistan, could have played a role in motivating them to see the profits? Now, what have been the profits, according to Nobel Prize winning economist from Columbia University, Dr. Joseph Stiglitz? The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq will end up costing us over $6 trillion. A lot of that made by private companies, including Dick Cheney's former company, Halliburton. So what are your thoughts on this, please?
Well, I agree with essentially everything that Dr. Bauman so clearly presented for us, as well as I substantially agree with your interpretations. It's some of this, of course, is outside of my area of expertise, but I find it very plausible, and certainly as the leading judge in Italy, with his recent recommendation that we have this tried at the International Criminal Court, that we certainly have a way more than enough justification for a serious new independent investigation. Indeed, serious questions whether or not there really ever has been any independent investigation, because the one we did have, the nominal official investigation, was so corrupted by leadership, by someone who was closely tied to the White House, and for which we understand that now the table of contents was basically it scripted beforehand, before they met, and that when they wrote it up, it was all carefully scripted to conform to a pre-given theory and framework, and as you noted, everything inconsistent with that framework disappeared from the 9/11 Commission report, including any reference to explosions, which we now have substantially established, as well as, for example, no reference to Building 7. The very fact of the collapse of Building 7 is not even in the 9/11 Commission report, which I find astonishing.
All right. Let's go back over to you, Dr. Bauman. What do you believe is the likely outcome if we have anyone break ranks inside a very large cabal to talk?
Well, I don't know. We had a deathbed confession of E. Howard Hunt that he was part of the guys on the grassy knoll who shot John F. Kennedy, and nothing has been done. That deathbed confession has been essentially ignored by the mainstream media, and I don't know if even a confession of one of the co-conspirators of 9/11 will be enough to get the powers that be to put aside their financial interests and actually do something.
All right.
By the way, I've written a lot about this in my newsletter, The Patriots, and if anyone is interested in that, They can get it through my website, www.thepatriots.us, or, you know, get a hold of me and request a subscription, and I'll get it to you.
What do you believe is the single most compelling piece of information and contradiction that you have found in this investigation, by yourself or others?
Oh, my. Well, there are so many, it's really hard to pick out any one. To me, Building 7 is the smoking gun. There are so many contradictions between the reality of what happened with regard to Building 7 and what we have been told or not told, that there's no way that you can square that. Building 1 and Building 2, those were planned enough in advance that they could plausibly make it look to an untrained person like it was a normal collapse caused by those planes and those fires, although to any of us with technical training, we saw immediately that that was impossible. When the buildings started coming down, I said, this isn't happening. This is not possible. Totally against the laws of physics. And but Building 7 is something else, because they didn't plan it that way. They planned for a third aircraft to impact Building 7 and then for it to collapse. So the suspicious way that this happened, you just got to look at the videotape, and you see essentially a spontaneous collapse of an apparently unharmed building with no visible fires. It's just ridiculous, and they won't investigate that.
If I may note another thing as a footnote to that well-stated note on Building 7. This is Tim Eastman. With regard to the peer review analysis I did, with a focus on mechanism of collapse and with a focus on Building 7, over the first 10 years, the number of peer-reviewed papers that conclude there was controlled demolition is well over 10 such papers. That's not a large number, but it's significant. And the number of papers that support the official theory and support fire induced progressive collapse in that 10 years is zero. I have yet to find a single case of a peer-reviewed paper that supports that in the first 10 years. There is now one paper after the 10 years by a NIST group that basically is just a summary of their report, for which other research papers have identified a large number of serious and substantial errors.
All right, we appreciate that input. Now, our final part of our program, our last few minutes here, I would like for you to share your points of view. And we'll start with you, Professor Bauman, on the media and the fact that the media has not once found it important enough to do an independent investigation. No media, no CNN, no one has touched this. They accept the official version without challenge. Your thoughts on this, please.
Well, it's obvious to me that they have been ordered to do so from the top levels of their media organizations. And so you've got to include the heads of CBS and MSNBC and all the rest of them in your list of suspects that are part of the cover-up. It's amazing to me that they can get such broad control of all of the major media, but they have.
All right. And Professor Eastman, your final thoughts on this issue?
Well, it strikes me that somewhat like, as Dr. Bowman knows, with access to classified data, and I was involved with such back in the 70s with the Los Alamos Scientific Laboratories, that is there's a need-to-know clearance. And so the core group with an operation like this probably could have been a rather modest group in the size of the key perpetrators, perhaps on the order of a couple dozen or so key groups that in turn had a need-to-know relative to a very small, very few handful of top-level decision-makers. And then from that group of a couple dozen on down to what might have been indirectly involved, a couple hundred, as you described, then those people would be ones implementing a directive, given a different reason for it, perhaps, likely not suspecting that it had connection with such an operation. So I don't think it requires us to suppose something that is so unbelievable as to suppose that everybody is desiring a cover-up or implementing a cover-up in ways that are radically inconsistent with their own understanding of themselves or of their of being good citizens, but instead are doing what they think is best, but then within a context of isolated orders for which they don't really know what the real objective is.
Okay, I appreciate that. Gentlemen, thank you both for being on today and for your continued courage to speak out on these issues. I'm Gary Knoll. As we approach the last minute of our program, let me just remind you of the significance. These are men who have taken the time and effort to engage in real scholarship. Both of them are impeccable in their background. The professor, Timothy Eastman, has a doctorate in geophysics from the University of Alaska, is the deputy group manager for space science support at NASA, Goddard Space Flight Center, and also is one of the world's experts in plasmas research. He is a signatory for the Scientists for 9/11 Truth, a group of scientific professions calling for the independent and science-based investigation into the events of 9/11 associated with peer review publication. And he took his time opening the show for almost 13 minutes, just explaining in minutia how he would look at all the peer-reviewed scientific literature. And he is appalled by, A, what supports the official version. It's so thin and threadbare and filled with inconsistencies and bad science. And what is challenging it that never sees the light of day except in a peer-reviewed journal, which is rarely seen by anyone. And then we have Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bauman, himself one of the top people within the military intelligence industry, the person who oversaw the formidable program under Reagan and Carter on our Star Wars program and Ford. And he was the one who defined Star Wars in a 1977 secret memo. He also has a PhD in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech. And he is an expert on national security. And he's saying it was a false flag operation run by the neocons and accuses Dick Cheney. That's our program. I thank you all for taking the time to listen. And his website, thepatriots.us. Have a nice day.